Hello everyone. I was asked to do a chat or interview or whatever you want to call it with a chap called Jim Willey, whose name was given to me and contact established through Frank Ferguson. And Frank Ferguson was the person that actually introduced me to Dr. Judy Wood way back in 2007. So of course, when he seemed quite insistent that I should talk to Jim Willey, I obviously thought that this was going to be something which was important based on our previous, you know, interactions and so forth. And what this interview is about really is about the economic situation which has built up over the last sort of 20 years and how this plays into what appears to be a big part of this coronavirus scam. And Jim Willey talks for about an hour and a half, going through his understanding, his knowledge of how this all built up, and you know, what it's kind of resulted in, which I think, and he sort of suggests, he doesn't say it outright, but it appears that, you know, this coronavirus scam is basically, you know, an economic scam. And we know it's got nothing to do with the virus. It's got nothing to do with that. And it's different to 9/11 and so forth. So listen to this interview now. There aren't many pictures in it or anything. My video quality isn't great because the lighting wasn't great in here when I was recording and I didn't have time to do anything with it. I don't have any really particularly well set up video equipment and so forth. I do these things in a very ad hoc fashion. And I hope you find this very interesting and revealing. And it should, I think, give you a backdrop to what's going on. And I'm very grateful to both Jim Willey for giving his time to us, and also to Frank Ferguson for putting us in touch. And you can look at Jim Willey's website, which is the goldenjackass.com, and you can support his work through that website if you wish to do so, and get some consultancy from him if you wish to do that. But of course, this information is for everyone, and I hope that it helps you to understand what's been going on in this time period of from sort of December 2019 to now as we are April 2020. So thanks for watching, and I'll just go into the interview now. Okay, so hello everybody. Now I'm talking to a chap called Jim Willey today, who's very kindly agreed to spend roughly an hour with me just sort of discussing some things. And just by way of introduction, I was asked to speak to Jim by a chap called Frank Ferguson. And for those that have watched some of the other videos and stuff that I've been involved with, they may have heard of Frank Ferguson, but he was the guy that was responsible back in 2007 putting me in touch with a certain Dr. Judy Wood. So on that sort of recommendation, as it were, I was very interested to talk to Jim. And I would like to just start by getting Jim just to give us a bit of background, because I don't know an enormous about Jim. I did chat to him for about a couple of hours the other day. But so, Jim, could you sort of thumbnail of your background as much as you want to tell, or, you know, whatever you want to give?
Sure. My background is expertise in math. I was kind of like the math guru of my high school class, and nice little competitors. But I was a rebel in college, and I really didn't like the honors math program. I thought they were just too weird, too weird. So I got myself a bachelor's in computer science. I loved programming, algorithm, data structures. I thought it was just a lot of fun. I mean, imagine having a computer at your avail, fingertips. Okay, then I went on for a master's in statistics because I minored in math. I didn't give it up. I took a lot of different science courses. That was a lot of fun. Biology, genetics was my favorite, although I didn't get A's in it. But I got a master's and then a PhD at Carnegie Mellon. Some of the best years of my life. I was 5 years there. Tremendous time. Good contacts. A couple of favorite professors. A couple of professors that I had run-ins with. You know, I have kind of an abrasive personality, but I don't really plan on changing that in any way. I think it's worked to my advantage to get to the core of what's wrong with all these different major financial economic chaotic problems that never go away. And we got through 2008, Andrew, and all we did was we repeated the same thing globally. And I like to say that the U.S. Treasury bond is the global subprime bond. But from graduate school, I had a very interesting doctoral thesis. I don't want to give away my identity by talking about the actual topic, but it was a lot of work. It paved the way for opening a little avenue into a number of different areas that my thesis advisor told me, Jim, this is branched out. And I thought, well, that's good. I'm glad. You know, I got to tell you something about earning a PhD. I won't go long-winded, but
yeah,
many people who earn a PhD did so because they linked up with a good fellow or a good woman. I linked up with a good fellow who basically put on a silver platter the concept of a PhD thesis. And he said, Jim, here's a research paper for the normal distribution. Go do it for all. And I said, okay, all right. I'm not giving much away there. But he gave me one example and said, I think this is true for the universe, not just the normal. So go figure it all out. And I did. And it took longer than it should have because, you know, a young kid is not an experienced researcher. So there's tripping, there's fumbling, there's mistakes, there's diversion, like having a girlfriend, like the summer job. Okay, all stops at the summer. It's time for tennis, frisbee, bicycle, and going to visit my lady in Connecticut. You know, I then got a job where it was Digital Equipment Corporation, number two to IBM, and it was ahead of Hewlett-Packard. So it was the big three, IBM, DEC, and Hewlett-Packard, and there was a bunch of them after that. But my first job was quality control in the manufacturing environment. I did something rather significant there that enabled a lot of different savings from test procedures, and it was instituted globally across Digital Equipment Corp, all their manufacturing sites, and saved something like $75 million a year for my 4 or 6 months of effort. I felt betrayed by my manager. I told him, really, you know, F you. Don't want to be with you anymore. You're a liar. You're dishonest. You broke promises. You're not a good person to work for. I'm leaving. So I went to the same company, a different role for marketing research. So there I had quality control. I didn't really enjoy it a whole lot, but I made a mark and did some significant things. But I really loved marketing research. Oh, what a world it is. Lots of different multivariate statistical methods, factor analysis, you know, basic regression, sure. But there was so much more, cluster analysis. And I worked at Digital for that during the time when Unix was being introduced. And C plus, so it was a big wrench in the works for the proprietary systems. From there, I went to a different job at Staples because Digital made some enormous mistakes at the highest level. I like to call them, they committed $10 billion errors. And I don't want to get into all that, but
I know a bit about the history of Digital Equipment Corporation. One of my friends used to work for them, actually, in the UK. So, yeah, carry on, yeah.
There was a book called In Search of Excellence, and it was about Digital, but it was about their excellence in producing the VAX computer system. And as soon as the book was out and published and made it a big hit, the company folded from mistakes. So it was a rise and fall that was very quick. I went from there to Staples, where it was sales analysis and forecasting. And I thought, this is going to be really boring, but it was not. It was just very interesting problems. Of course, the forecasting had its routine element, but we made it interesting by, you know, capturing the seasonality and the swings. And I actually captured the seasonality within product sets. I was in charge of seasonality. So I felt like I was in good position to say that most of what the U.S. government does on seasonal adjustment is absolute and total horseshit. I went from there to a small consulting firm before that ended. I like to say I was replaced by two younger kids who had lesser qualifications but the same total salary. Mm-hmm. You know, I got downsized. It wasn't really a downside. I got replaced by two.
Yeah.
It wasn't that two people were needed to do my job. It was they didn't think that they needed my role of teaching the other analysts difficult statistical methods, like logistic regression, which is take a whole bunch of different characteristics of a person and make a predictive model of whether they're Apple users. And what we did was whether they were cigarette smokers. But the same method applies for Apple users or portable device users. And then you can then say, well, we got 100,000 different potential marketing targets, and we want to know how do we go after them. Well, you use your predictive model on a portion where you have the known outcome. Yes, we know they're Apple users, so now we've got a large target. Let's go search out of these 100,000 for the most likely Apple users, and you do a marketing plan for it. Okay, they decided at my consulting firm they didn't want that anymore. They just wanted a couple of foot soldiers. They didn't want a heavy-duty analyst. So I started the website, The Hattrick Letter. I gave myself a pen name. My name is not James Willie. No, come on. I mean, at conferences, they introduced me as Dr. Willie, and I giggled. I giggled in Canada. I giggled. I said, well, okay, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. That's respectful, whatever. So with the website and the newsletter, it just grew and grew and grew. And what I noticed, Andrew, and we'll get right into the topics in a minute, what I noticed was that the economics – angle behind the gold story and the currency issue was inadequate.
Right.
And it was dominated by Wall Street bankers.
Right. So basically, if I may summarize then, so you've got this background essentially in various types of analysis and forecasting and statistics. And you said there, you know, you're involved in digital equipment and so forth and sales and then marketing. So you were looking at those types of statistics. You were building forecast models, building profiles and that sort of thing, regression analysis and all of that. And then you took that, you started the website, which do you want to give the website again? It's the Golden
Jackass. www.golden-jackass.com.
And What year did you start that then? Just to sort of 2004. So you took all of that, and then you started looking, as you say, at the currency markets and the gold and silver markets, yeah? And you were sort of applying the thinking and the modeling and those sort of analytical skills to those markets, correct?
Yes, and let me point out one interesting little quick story that gives away some of my background and ability to see things. I don't like to say, you know, my expertise, but here's something where I disagreed with a fellow who was in GATA. GATA is the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. It's basically challenging the U.S. government for having a fraudulent dollar. I was in a taxi with the fellow, and he said, Jim, with all the debt coming for the United States government and the slower economy, I think the dollar is going to fall. And I said, I don't think so. They've got a higher interest rate than the rest. And if anything I've learned in the last couple of years, it's that the currencies are really the tail that are on the bond market dog. By that I mean, if you've got a higher bond yield, the market is going to give you a higher currency value because it will pursue that bond yield. You're going to get arbitrage where they'll buy the dollar and sell whatever that's lower in yield, and the arbitrage will use leverage and amplify the difference even more, so the arb trade will result in an even higher dollar. So I got that right, and the fellow in the taxi admitted to me a year later, Jim, you got that right. I don't know how I missed it. I said, it's all in the bond yield. Everything is in the bond yield. This is financial engineering. And it's not 101, it's 201. It's using arbitrage. And, you know, some people are wondering, why did the United States drop down to zero so quickly? Well, one reason is they were going to go to zero anyway because hedge funds were shorting the euro bond, which was negative, and getting paid for it and buying the treasury bond. So they just thought, let's just make this six-month process overnight. Let's take that away from the hedge funds. Okay, Trump has made a lot of enemies, and right now he's made enemies of the hedge funds because they took away their arbitrage trade of the euro versus the dollar and instantly gave them the outcome, whereas they could have made billions in the next 6 to 10 months.
Okay. Can you explain what arbitrage is? That's not a term I'm at all familiar with. So can you explain that and a bit about bonds, just a sort of layman's explanation of what bonds are? Because, again, it's not something I've got a bit of an idea, but...
Okay, let me give you an example. Let me change the dynamics so that it's not as confusing. Mm. Let's say the euro bond is trading at 0.3%, the euro bond, short-term euro bond. And the long-term treasury bond is trading at, let's just say, 1.5%. Okay, so you short the euro bond, you must pay 0.3%. You buy the long-term treasury and you gain 1.5%. So your difference is that you earn 1.2% by shorting the euro bond and going long the treasury bond. Now let's say you put it all on 25-to-1 leverage, 25 times 1.2, and you're up around 30% per year. This is exactly how the U.S. Treasury bond came down in yield from 2.5, because it was actually higher than many of the competitor global favorites 10 years ago. Okay, so arbitrage is taking advantage of a difference. Let me give you another example. Let's say you think, oh gosh, what's a good one? Let's move back in time. Let's move back in time 10 years, and you like General Electric. And they've got a bond that pays like 4%. And you think, well, with the good economy 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, General Electric has a 3% bond, but the treasuries are at 2%. So let's short the treasury and go long the GE bond and earn 1% and put 25-to-1 leverage on that, so we get 25%. Now GE is doing well, the economy did well, so their bonds gained value and you earned a little bit more on top of that. So take advantage of differentials. In most arbitrage trades, the treasury bond is the foundation. It is the anchor. It's they call it the basis. And lately there's been a complex arbitrage trade going on that really screwed things up and really blew up badly. Last autumn, when you had the big repo volume of $200 billion overnight, what's that all about? I remember following that when it was $40 and $50 billion a night for the repo volume and thought, My forecast was this is going to explode. It's going to get to 100, 200, maybe 500 billion in the next several months. And that turned out to be a correct forecast. But here's what they were doing. They were buying the treasury. They were buying the U.S. Mm-hmm. Treasury and shorting the interest rate swap derivative. This is a very complex instrument, but they use the interest rate swap derivative in order to create phony treasury bond demand, because the whole world is on a boycott right now with respect to the treasury bond. They went to QE, Andrew, in 2012 for a very good reason. There were no more buyers. They had to rely on the Fed to use printed money. This is like what Zimbabwe did. It's called monetizing your debt. Print money and buy the U.S. government debt. It's a very dangerous thing to do. How did it turn out, Andrew? A disaster?
Well, you tell me. Yeah, I assume it was disastrous, yeah.
This is disaster right now. In fact, we're on the verge of losing the democracy. Mm-hmm. Not that we had a whole lot, but we're losing the impression of democracy as we speak.
Yes.
From what I call a medical fascist takeover.
Right.
So,
yeah.
The interest rate swap derivative is very important because for the last several years, it's been the primary driving force behind producing treasury bond demand. I mean, how is it that the United States had trillion-dollar annual deficits, yet our interest rate, the bond, had a yield that was rather tame, 2, 3, 4%? How is it that Italy, which had a 10% bond yield back in 2010, 10%, like Greece and Italy, this 10%. How is it that their interest rate is now like under 1% negative? It's because the Euro Central Bank is buying their bond. There's no bond market anymore. There's no more bond market for the sovereigns. By that, I mean government debt. So you've got the Euro bond purchased by the Euro Central Bank. You've got the Treasury bond purchased by the Federal Reserve. You got interest rate swap derivatives creating phony demand, working on arbitrage of short-term versus long-term, coupon versus non-coupon. It gets very messy. We broke the bond market, and now we're in infinite QE, which I forecasted last summer.
Can you explain what QE is? I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, QE is quantitative easing.
Oh, okay, yes, I've heard of that. Yeah, so that's just creating money out of thin air, isn't it?
Well, it's...
Essentially.
That's monetary inflation. It's using money out of thin air to buy treasury bonds. It's not just making money out of thin air. It's putting it to work with the treasury bond, monetizing the debt. QE, okay, let me give you a little background history. Let's go back to 1990. Japan went to 0%. Now, this is a tough history question. If Japan was an industrial dynamo with a surplus, why did they need 0%?
I don't know. You'd think it would be different.
Well, I'll tell you why. We gave the reason that they were blowing a lot of money on construction projects that were for nothing, but that was a lie. It had to do with the fact that Japan lost World War II. We control their central bank. By we, I mean the United States, the Fed, the U.S. government. Department of Treasury and the Fed had a plot. Let's push Japan down to 0% so that we could borrow Japanese money and buy U.S. Treasury bonds and buy U.S. stocks like the S&P 500. That is an arbitrage trade. Borrow the yen and push up the U.S. stocks and bonds.
Okay.
And Wall Street earned a few trillion dollars by using the fact that Japan was a vassal state. Okay. Robert Rubin came along in the year 2000 or 99, and his experience for qualifications as Clinton's Secretary of Treasury, or as British call it, Ministry of Finance, we call them secretaries. I don't know why the United States calls them secretary. I think we just like to be different, like our stupid temperature system with Fahrenheit and our stupid measure system with feet and yards. It's all stupid, and it's intended to keep the United States apart from the rest of the world. But Robert Rubin made his mark at Goldman Sachs in their gold trading department. So what did he do in the year 1996 or so? With Clinton, he made the gold lease rate 0% and enabled Wall Street to borrow gold at 0%, which they used in an arbitrage. There are two sides to an arbitrage. They borrowed at 0% with gold and bought the U.S. Treasury bond. And they made a cool $1 trillion. Okay, these arbitrage trades are illegal, they're corrupt, and they enable Wall Street trillion-dollar profits. But what is the result of driving down the lease rate for gold? It pushes down the dollar, pushes down the gold price in dollar terms. Okay, so by the year 2000, the game was over. Clinton left town. He didn't stop killing people or didn't stop stealing. But he left town, left the White House, and the gold carry trade was done. And what are we left with? A tech telecom bust. We just go from one crime scene to the next in the United States with our so-called financial engineering that absolute, I don't know what to call him. He's not an idiot. Criminal genius, Sir Alan Greenspan. He boasted in 2001 that the offloaded risk enabled the United States financial system to be the envy of the world. And he left town because he realized that he was wrong. And he left Ben Bernanke to be the bag holder for the entire Lehman incident. And that itself is an untold story. Do you want to hear a little bit about that? Andrew, we're not getting to your questions, but
that's all right.
Okay, we can stop and go to your questions anytime you want. Okay, we didn't learn anything from the tech telecom bust. We decided, well, we need to drive our interest rates down to zero, have Greenspan lead the charge. He knocked down interest rates and urged everybody to refinance their mortgages and to open mortgage second, what do you call it, second mortgage, what do you got? Home equity line of credit, HELOCs. Get second mortgages and home equity lines and keep the economy going. And that absolute imbecile, George Bush Jr., I don't care whether he's a junior, baby Bush, call him whatever you want, that idiot with an 80 IQ who occupied the White House, urged everybody to go out and spend, 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 keep our economy going. But they borrowed money against their homes. And the end result was millions of foreclosures during the Lehman incident, because that all went bad. They always go bad with the U.S. cyclical, nonsensical financial engineering asset bubble, because we largely gave away our industry. I could not understand in the mid-80s, what are we doing? We're giving away our industry. This is insane. This is a nation's heart and soul of true legitimate income generation. And Greenspan said, well, we got financial engineering. And I said, well, give that 10 or 15 years and that'll all fall apart. So I realized at an early age in my 30s and early 40s that I knew what was going on better than some of these moronic PhD economists from Harvard and Chicago. I've had three debates with – I'm going to get to the Lehman story in a minute. I've had three debates with Ivy League PhD economists, and I walked away shaking my head. These people are fools. They're Keynesian idiots. They're going to lead us down a path of disaster, and they did. I've only encountered one Ivy League economist, PhD, who was excellent, a guy named Richard Benson. He was from Harvard, and he basically had to make a career by being a maverick, because he wasn't the standard Keynesian fool. Keynesians now have wrecked the system. We're moving on to bigger and better stupidity. Let me give you a thumbnail of what happened with Lehman. Okay. We allowed Wall Street to create mortgage finance bubble. They created a database called MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Registry System, MERS, and they made it a grand crime scene full of fraud. Now, if you know anything about mortgage bonds, you know that each mortgage bond has maybe, let's just say, 100 dedicated income streams from the mortgages. But one mortgage from a home, one title, one bond. Okay? You can't have one mortgage in two or three different bonds, and they did. They used the MERS database to manage the crime scene. I'm talking about Wall Street, not a single prosecution for bond fraud post-Lehman, not one prosecution for fraud and criminal sentencing. No, only cut deals. We're going to give those investors, you know, $1.2 billion and they'll go away. So we built up this bubble of mortgage bonds and mortgage finance. This is basically a walk down memory lane for U.S. finance history, but that's fine, because it's I think, very, very illuminating. But we created this mortgage bond bubble, which enabled the housing market bubble. They could not have had a market bubble for the housing without the bubble for the finance, because it enabled the purchase. There was the funds. And we had the ninjas, the no income, no job. Are you kidding me? This is how stupid it got. don't have to prove your income, no documentation. Come on down, we got a mortgage for you. Because Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and the rest had created a criminal system that they knew would run out of time and it would all fall apart. But let me explain how it fell apart. In 2005, remember, this is 3 years before Lehman, China decided we're going to get rid of $200 billion worth of Fannie Mae bonds because we don't like where this is going. And there is a whole lot more. We had a reneged gold lease in 1998 associated with the Hong Kong transfer. So we leased a bunch of gold and we never gave it back. We basically said, you know, screw you. And China said, we're going to sell $200 billion worth of Fannie Mae bonds. And what that did was it started an avalanche in ultra slow motion. By 2007, I had actually forecasted on my newsletter in 2006, this is going to all come apart. It's going to take a year or two. I don't know, maybe three. I don't know. It depends on how much more they layer on the crime scene. And Wall Street has absolute and total license to lay on the crime scene, layer on the crime scene. Okay, so, you know, by 2006, it was pretty obvious we had a subprime bond problem. It was denied by Wall Street. By 2007, they couldn't deny it anymore. It was starting to break. You had default rates all over the place. And by 2008, I forecasted right around March, April, May, that in the next several months, we're going to have a terrific crisis. And it's going to be centered in the housing market with mortgage finance. And it's going to take down a Wall Street bank. Well, it didn't necessarily take down a rank and file. I got to be careful of my descriptions. For people who know the history of Wall Street, they know that Lehman Brothers was different. Okay, they also know that Bear Stearns was different. And I'll tell you how Bear Stearns was different. They were long gold and short the dollar, so they got killed. They got killed by their Wall Street brethren. They got ganged up upon and were killed. Of course, they made their mistakes with the mortgage bond problem, but so did all the rest. They were killed because they were long gold and short the dollar, and when they were killed, all their contracts were liquidated and Wall Street had better control of the gold versus dollar market. How was Lehman Brothers different? Well, very simply, they were the king of the mortgage bonds. They were the king of the bond market. Lehman Brothers had a name of being the primary bond market. Corporate bond, mortgage bond, junk bond, emerging market bond, but primarily corporate bond and treasury bond. Why did they get killed? That's a good question, and I don't have a perfect answer. I've got a decent answer. I don't. One thing you'll notice about me with my work, Andrew, is if I don't know something, I say, well, I'm not really sure about that. Here's what I think. We need more time to evaluate this. I'm too bright on this. Let me close the curtain just very slightly.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's going to be a little bit better. Lehman Brothers was different. Okay, I was explaining something about I didn't know the answer.
You didn't know the answer to the, and it was they were in the bond market, and they controlled the mortgage bonds.
Okay. And, okay. Yeah. Okay. Very good. So I'm sorry for that. I
that's all right.
I'm getting old.
I'm just the same.
Well, I'm going to turn 68 in a couple months. I've been collecting Social Security for 2 years, and I hope it doesn't stop. But anyway, I do have my senior moment. That doesn't sound right. I hate to say that. I lost my train of thought. That sounds better. Lehman Brothers was different. And, you know, Hollywood likes to make movies in order to form public opinion. They've done it a few times. They had one called The Big Short about Lehman Brothers. And Jeremy Irons, one of your Britishers, played I think the name of the CEO was Fald, F-A-L-D, the CEO of Lehman Brothers. And right. I don't think Fald was British, so I don't know why they bring in a British actor to play a U.S. banking CEO. Anyway, that's another issue. But what I've come to learn was that Lehman Brothers wasn't just different by having a concentration on the bond market. They really weren't one of the brethren. They didn't fit in like with country clubs. They didn't fit in with the $200 lunches. And I believe they might not have fit in with the ritual seller, dark world pedophile crime scenes. So Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan decided, let's kill them. And when they killed them, here's how they killed them. You know, you got to look at these historical accounts, and if it's a major story and a major crisis, it's like 90% a lie. You can look at every war since Vietnam. It's all a lie. Every single one is a lie. You can look at Ukraine, Iraq, whatever. The lie here was that Lehman Brothers just had too big a commitment and exposure to mortgage bonds, too big a leverage, not enough capital base. Well, forensic analysts have examined Wall Street banks and concluded JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs were even worse. Why didn't they die? Why did Lehman Brothers die? And the answer is really quite simple. Because Goldman Sachs was in charge of the Department of Treasury. Because JP Morgan was in charge of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is basically the market rigging hedge fund that the Treasury Department uses.
Right.
So that dynamic duo decided we can kill Lehman, then we can sack control of what's his name? Maurice Greenberg. Hank Greenberg of AIG. Sack control of AIG without any legal right. And then we can give 100 cents on the dollar to Goldman Sachs on all the failed bonds. And we can do the same for JP Morgan. And Wall Street will run on and we can just blame it all on Lehman. So what they do is they create what's called a black hole. And in the Lehman black hole, all kinds of documents fall in there and go missing.
Mm.
And they're implicated. They implicate JP Morgan. Can you say Building 7?
I can.
Okay. That's where a lot of the records were, Building 7.
Okay.
It did not have any explosives. It did not have any naturally occurring
No. Did Goldman Sachs have offices in that building then, or was it JP Morgan or both, or was it another organization, the financial, you know, sort of watchdog or something?
It was a JP Morgan facility, but it was largely a data storage facility. I think they had a lot of records there. They might have had some servers, computer servers.
Okay.
I think they also had a bunch of workers, and they were all told to get out.
Right.
I've had actually two clients who know people who were directly called on September 10th. Don't show up to work at the World Trade Center. They were both given fair warning. They were told you'll know why at noon. Don't ask questions and don't talk to anybody. And these two people had one thing in common. How should I say this tactfully? They go to their religious institutions on Saturday night and they don't eat pork.
Okay.
It doesn't narrow it down completely, but I think you get the idea.
Yeah, I get the idea.
Okay. So Lehman Brothers was killed. And Goldman Sachs got 100 cents on the dollar. Many other banks who had bonds, mortgage bonds, and the insurance policy on a mortgage bond is called a credit default swap. And it's a weird word, weird name, but all it means is, well, if your bond goes bust, you can swap it for cash. You can give it to the insurer for cash. And what I noticed in early 2008 and late 2007 was that the Lehman Brothers credit default swap was moving up from the normal 0.2% or 0.1% up into 1.5%, then 2%, then 2.5%. And when it got to 2.5%, 2.7%, I said, this is game over. It's going to blow up. There's no history of any bond CDS, credit default swap, insurance policy on a bond. There's no historical record of going over 2% and not failing rapidly, imminently. So I got that right. The voice actually called me up one time and said, Jim, we got something coming up on the weekend of September 13th, and you're on record as making your forecast, and you got it right, but you're only talking about Lehman. There are three that are going to fail. Who are they? You know, he put me on the spot. And I said, well, you know, I wrote about Lehman, so that's one. He said, yep, you got Lehman. Mm-hmm. I said, Fannie Mae's stock went down 90%. I warned a lot of people to get out of it before it fell, and they're very grateful. Some of them shorted it. It wasn't easy to short because there aren't a whole lot of shares to short like that. They have to be in that brokerage house inventory and on margin purchase in order to short. Very complex.
Right.
But he said, okay, what's the third one, Jim? And I said, I don't know. And he said, I'll give you a hint, insurance. And I said, I don't know, Nationwide, you know, John Hancock, I really don't know. And he said, you'll find out. I'm not going to tell you. It was AIG. It wasn't a standard, you know, property and casualty insurance. It was a financial engineering insurance house. And Hank Greenberg has unsuccessfully had two or three lawsuits against his Wall Street brethren. He did not have any – there was no justification for overtaking AIG, none whatsoever. But the Wall Street gang, it's – you know, the Department of Treasury with Goldman Sachs running it and J.P. Morgan with their hedge fund, the ESF, running it. They took it over. They just killed it. They just took it over and said, you're in default. And Greenberg said, no, we're not. We owe a lot of money for the bonds that were insured, but we're not insolvent. And J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs said, you're in default. We're taking over U.S. government edict. And that was that, because they wanted to make sure that Goldman Sachs got 100 cents on the dollar and J.P. Morgan the same. They didn't want to have the run-of-the-mill 60 cents on the dollar for the other ones, the other banks. And some of the lesser ones, like, you know, regional banks and, you know, minor hedge funds that weren't Wall Street related, they got 30 cents on the dollar. But there were many others who didn't have insurance. They were for the credit, collateralized debt obligations. I was getting stuck with credit. C was not for credit, it was collateralized. So, you know, the collateralized debt obligations were basically a fund of rubbish, a fund of leveraged bond rubbish with falsified AAA ratings. And I mean, they got it so down on the crime scene that they did leverage off the leverage. They call them leverage squared. And those went to zero overnight, because if you're leverage squared, it means you're not 10 to 1. You're more like 100 to 1. So if you lose 1 or 2%, you're gone. But when you're rising, it's good. I mean, this is Wall Street. This is financial engineering, American style. We are so screwy. We are loopy. We don't fix anything. We didn't fix the system after Lehman. I mean, we call it Lehman. It's the global financial crisis, the GFC. Yeah, okay, we got a new acronym to describe the Lehman crime scene and the financial engineering. Okay, what we did, Andrew, was to repeat everything and amplify it with expanded criminality and fraud and do it to the treasury bond. And I thought back in 09, well, you know, in 08, I said, no, early 09, I said, we've got to go to 0%. I was called stupid. I don't mind being called stupid, because I just tell them, get back to me in a year or two. They don't, because I was proved correct.
Yeah.
Okay, then in 2011 and 12, I said, we're going to have to do the same thing, Japan, that we're going to have to go to QE, because we don't have any legitimate buyers for our debt. We've got to enable arbitrage. We have to offer it at near zero so that others can get involved in it and finance it get the swap trades in, and all the other financial engineering tricks that are used with the hedge funds. I mean, one reason the repo volume went up so great, so high, so fast, was that hedge funds were buying treasuries as the basis of their arbitrage trades when they were shorting the interest rate swap derivative. They were going long the treasury bonds and short the derivatives. I mean, it's insane. And that's why the Fed said, we're going to cover the hedge funds. They're welcome to the window, the repo window. That was to enable the hedge funds to continue in financing the U.S. government debt. And it just, all it did was bought time. We've created the treasury bond as the subprime bond globally. I started calling it the global subprime bond in 2017. Mm-hmm. By 2018, I said, we're going to go forget this tightening. They'll reverse all that. People say, oh, you're crazy, Jim. They're going to go back to normal. They have to. I said, no, they have to go back to zero. They have to go back to infinite QE. They have to go to infinite QE. They have to go back to QE, rather, and make it infinite, because this is all breaking. And it's happening. What I didn't expect, Andrew, I did not expect that they would bring about a phony virus and grand hoax in order to shut down the economy and install a fascist state. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to get a dollar problem and a dollar breakdown and a dollar rejection, where the U.S. economy was going to be suffering from import supply, that nations would say, we don't want your dollar, and therefore we're not going to supply your ports. So your Walmart and Target and Staples and all your big retailers, Office Depot, would be bare on the shelves. And what I think happened was, this is just my personal belief, since the United States realized the rest of the world was going to do a boycott on the dollar and refuse the dollar in trade and result in grand shortages across the United States, they decided to make it global, to bring about this virus hoax. I'm not going to mince words. Of course there's a virus. Is it a very dangerous virus? No.
I agree.
Is it worse than the bronchitis that I had in 2017? Hell no. It took me 2 months to get over that, 2.5 months. I'm told that this virus, the corona, has a course of about 7 to 12 days. What's the big deal? Let's shut down the global economy for a nasty standard variety virus.
So what, if I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly, then, is it, you know, and obviously this may be hopelessly wrong, but based on your description and the sort of build-up that you've given there, sounds to me like this is all basically the world is being held to ransom because of the US dollar and the US debt. Can you know, is that sort of layman sort of, yeah, can you expand on that?
Yeah, and it's hard for the layman to comprehend that, because they would say, but there are virus cases. And I say, there are always virus cases. And they say, but this one seems different. And I say, the news is saying it's different. Who controls the news? And then you get down an entirely different argument. Who controls the news? Well, it's 90% the security agencies. I hate to say it, but that's the truth.
And you mentioned earlier on, I think quite early on in the conversation, you mentioned something like a medical, I can't remember the exact word that you
medical
used.
Medical fascist state.
Right. So this really then, if you expand on that medical bit, that I'm interested in your take on the medical bit of your term there, how you perceive that.
Well, first of all, I'm over 95% convinced this is an engineered bioweapon.
Okay.
But it's not clear whether it was altered before it was applied. And by altered, I mean weakened. There are indications that there are some very dangerous, nasty viruses out there, and one of them is Ebola. But remember, 2 years ago, we had an Ebola outbreak in West Africa, had a few cases in Los Angeles. These things are easily treated.
Yes,
the
I
corona,
agree.
The corona is so much less than Ebola that it's hilarious. I call it the mythical virus threat. Okay, you wanted to expand on the dollar issue. Okay, just think in terms of the U.S. Masters. The U.S. Masters are seeing, well, you know, it's not going to be long before our dollar is refused and our import supply is cut off. So what can we do to cut off the import supply everywhere? Well, we'll claim that there's a pandemic and the ships from China must stop. But I've got it on good authority that the Chinese were letting the United States know last autumn after the failed trade talks, we don't want your dollar anymore. We're not going to accept it. We want gold. And the United States said, we're not going to give you our gold. We're going to give you treasuries. And they said, we've got a stack of treasuries. We had $2 trillion. Now we have $1 trillion. We don't want any more treasuries. So the United States said, okay, we're going to just make up a pandemic, according to the 2010 Rockefeller plan.
Yes, indeed.
This is all previewed. All you have to do is be a better student and get your head out of your ass.
So basically then, if I'm reading your interpretation correctly, and is that they've been running these financial scams or financial engineering for decades and decades and decades, and over the last sort of like 20, 30 years, they've had all these interlocking scams to basically make it appear that the dollar actually has some value, but basically it hasn't really for many complicated reasons. So now they've got to come up with a new scam, not just like a financial or Wall Street scam or whatever. It's now morphed into another scam, which involves, a fake virus or, whatever the story is, so that they can then lock down other processes, which they can then use
control.
That scenario.
Control.
Yeah.
Okay. Basic question. Who benefits from this virus supposed outbreak? Okay, let's get simple. The manufacturers of the vaccines, the manufacturers of the medicines, the manufacturers of the testing kits. I'm told that it cost Gilead $3 for a test and they charged $300. Okay, 100-to-1 markup. Typically in the pharmaceutical industry, it's some of the highest markups in all of commerce. Pharmaceuticals have typically about a 6- to 8-fold markup, and they justify it, sometimes legitimately, that they have to pay for their next generation research for different cures and treatments. Well, that's fine, except their vaccines contain suppressants to the immune system, which open the door to cancer. And I've got a question for a lot of people to mull over. Did the human society have a cancer problem before the 1960s? We might have had a few. Did we have millions of cases? I don't think so. So can you say that there's a relationship between the vaccination program that started in the 60s and 70s? And I remember vividly as I was a kid, a teenager, my gosh, cancer of the breast. Look at all that. Cancer of the lungs from smoking. Look at all that. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that there were no cigarette smokers in the 1900s, 1910s, 1920s, and 1930s, and 1940s, and 1950s? But suddenly we got a lot of lung cancer. So I believe that vaccines, which have attracted a lot of attention for their autism, like in mercury and other poison element they call, what do they call them? Adjuvants.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I maintain that they cut off the immune system's power. Mm. And, all you have to do is look at a few unusual cases like someone's skin rash went away, but at the same time, when they fought off the skin rash, they got rid of a certain cancer. Cancer is very related to just basic health disorder.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, skin cancer is one of the most visible. That's all. When I look at a person and they've got bad skin, I think they got bad organs all the way through. If they got really good skin, I think they got really good organs all the way through. Mm-hmm. People tell me, Jim, your face after you shave looks like a little baby's butt. And I say, well, thanks. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I take a lot of vitamins. I have good exercise, plenty of liquids and juices. I don't drink carbonated soda. And if my face looks like a baby's butt, I think all my organs are good. And I'm convinced of that.
Absolutely. Me too.
Okay, the dollar. Okay, beneficiaries. Let's go on with it. This is good. Okay. The Gates Foundation suddenly had millions of vaccines ready because the word was leaked out a year ago of this virus plan. The chief health officer, I don't even what to call him, Fauci.
Fauci, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I'm not sure. Yeah, absolutely.
He had a conversation with President Trump several months ago saying, you need to plan. You're going to be seeing a health epidemic. There's going to be something.
Yeah, I came across that story. I think it was 2017 he said that, actually. So it's quite a while ago.
Well, he also repeated it last summer.
Right.
And this is an ongoing theme.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Russian dossier plan didn't work, pure treason. The impeachment process didn't work. They couldn't even link to Russian spies. So they resort to a virus. Okay, you know, I'm getting stories now, and this requires validation. But
yes.
I'm not the only one talking about it. I just saw a video this morning with Robert David Steele on. He's calling them citizen journalists. I've been calling them foot soldier investigators. They're going to major U.S. cities to their hospitals asking for the intensive care ward, saying, how many coronavirus cases do you have? The answer in five American cities is all the same. Zero!
Yes.
Okay, this is sickening. This is a takeover of the media by the health industry, by the pharmaceutical industry. Okay, very few people understand. The National Institute of Health and the World Health Organization are Rockefeller institutions. The CDC, I believe, is 70% funded by the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, I got stories about them. Oh, man, I've got actual street-level stories of people being killed because they had alternative methods to cure cancer. If
yes,
you stop,
absolutely. Yeah, stop, I'm familiar with a lot of those. I've got some of them on my website as well. So, yeah, carry on.
Just starve on all the carbohydrates. No rice, no food. No rice, no bread.
Yeah.
No pasta. No pizza. Pizza has got a heavy-duty carbohydrate called sorghum.
Yes.
Okay, so the beneficiaries are going to be big pharma because they're ready in the wings, having prepared full boat pre-warning planning with vaccines. Okay, here's my theory. I'll make it very simple. Produce some cases of viral outbreak. Exaggerate it. Claim that it's gone global. Plant some in your enemy states like Iran and Italy. I'll explain how they are enemy states in a minute. Take over the news, lie about the statistics, offer very low-cost invalid testing kits, like 80 to 90% false positives. If you did that for pregnancy, the women of the world would attack the politicians and stomp them to death with high heels and you know, purses, blows to the head with purses. Okay, I'm of the opinion that false positives for pregnancy are something on the order of half of 1%, maybe less. So why is the false positives for coronavirus 80 to 90% because they want it that way.
Yes, agreed.
Okay, the top minister of health in Italy came out last Monday, a week ago today, to announce they had 2 proven corona case deaths in Italy, not 250, not on the news. So I pay attention to what's not on the news, like Wuhan having their car plants back to normal, like the false positives, like arrests in Italy of Vatican middle-level officials by U.S. military. I think Iran and Italy got doused with something. I don't know how. We'll probably find out soon. Okay, so they take over the news. They get ordinary people to think they've got a virus outbreak. They sell masks. They make them available. They got all these supplies ready. I don't need a mask. Get out of my face. I like to breathe regular air. Some of it has some standard viruses. Some of them don't. Why don't they have in the news that if you use your hair dryer or go into a sauna, you kill the virus? Why is it not in the news? The most important facts are items that are not in the news. You need to track that, and absolutely, that's what's in the hat trick letter. I got about 15 different things. I could actually look it up while we're talking, but everything is slower when you're running video on a Skype call.
Sure.
But who are the beneficiary? Big Pharma.
Yes.
Okay. It's bigger than that. It's much bigger than that. Who are the beneficiaries but those who want to install the fascist state? Okay, create a panic. Close the borders. Shut down the economy. And then institute martial law for health reasons. And then you change from a democracy to a fascist state with a supposed benevolent motive. But it doesn't go back.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the globalists who failed to put in Hillary as president, the global fascists who control the central banks, realize they're running out of time with their king dollar.
Yes.
The globalist fascists, they're called many things. The Khazarians, global fascists, central bank franchisers. I call them the globalist fascists or the cabal, banker cabal.
Yeah.
They ran out of time, Andrew, so they pulled their virus card.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go on a list here. These are all very important items not in the news that help to explain what's going on, help to explain how we get out of the problem, and help to explain why the news networks don't want us out of the problem. Okay, something like 70% or more of the coronavirus tests are false positives.
Yep.
Resulting, if you have 10,000 people tested who have a nasty flu, like what I had 3 years ago, 10,000? Well, 7,000 are going to be showing up as having corona.
Yep.
This is bullshit. Okay, second, soap tends to kill surface virus. Ionic silver tends to kill lung-based virus. Mm-hmm. And steam I think it's over 50 degrees centigrade and over 180 degrees Fahrenheit. In other words, if you're anywhere near the boiling point of water, the steam will kill their virus. Why is that not in the news? Because they don't want you to get better. They want you to take the very expensive big pharma solution that probably doesn't work.
It makes them less healthy, I think. Yes, it will make
like
you worse.
Vaccine. Yeah. Just like the vaccine. Okay, another one. U.S. military participated in a mock Olympic Games 2 weeks before the Wuhan virus was leaked.
Yep.
Okay, that's in the news a little bit, but not much. But it's a perfect leaking point. Instead, we hear the nonsensical story about they stole it in the United States and took it from there to Winnipeg and from there to Wuhan, where they didn't have proper techniques. I'm actually learning that they didn't have the greatest techniques in their bio lab. Okay, another one. 2 years ago, the Chinese had a really serious swine flu problem that the British gave them. All the different cases and the magnified counts were all along British Airways routes, very well studied, very well concluded, no doubt in anybody's mind except morons and people who wear the Union Jack for their underwear. The Chinese burned 100 million pigs that were sick. You think that might have produced a lot of bacteria in the air that could have easily resulted in pneumonia? I asked a medical buddy of mine. He's a client.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him two x-rays, one of a pneumonia pair of lungs and one of a coronavirus pair of lungs. And he said, let me get back to you, Jim. I got a radiologist buddy, an x-ray specialist. He got back to me in 2 days and said, Jim, they're almost exactly the same. So pneumonia has an overlap of virus, and pneumonia is prevalent in China even before they burn pigs. Yeah. After they burn pigs, I would say China had a pneumonia, what's the word, not pandemia, epidemic. I think China had a pneumonia epidemic, and I think they're overcoming it. Next point. Majority of deaths are for people over 80 years of age.
Yes.
Italy has admitted that. And there's a lot of stories that Italy has the oldest population in Europe. Okay, but, you know, not by a long shot. Let's be honest. There are much fewer 80-year-olds in Germany. They had a war. Next point. Let's just stick with this point. If there are a lot of people over 80 who have standard garden variety viruses and they have respiratory problems, they're going to die. I got in a discussion with a doorman yesterday. I like to talk to a lot of people to get impressions and figure out how people think. And he said, but Jim, there are a lot of dead people. There are a lot of people who died. And I said, there are always a lot of people who die. We had 35,000 people die in the United States last year from influenza. Wake the hell up! They're calling everything the corona. The test kits are wrong. The over 80 deaths, they're calling corona. And the Minister of Health in Italy corrected them, and it's not in the news. Next point. Many 5G radiation burn cases are being called coronavirus. If you took a look at a map of the rollout of 5G, you find that it's pretty much the map of the outbreak of coronavirus. So it's not just pneumonia overlapping. They call it confounding. In statistics, if you get two effects that are mixed, you call it a confounding effect. You can't separate them. You need to do a controlled experiment to separate the two effects.
Right.
Now, 2 weeks ago, I heard they're doing fast-track 5G rollout in New York City. So I said, okay, wait a week or two, and we're going to have an explosion in cases of coronavirus supposedly in New York City. It's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are they trying to separate the 5G radiation burn from the corona, or are they overwhelmed? I think in the cases that they do have, they're largely pneumonia or 5G radiation burns, and the hospitals know it because they're not stupid. Okay, you got stories now that there's a barge off New York City and there's a barge off Los Angeles. I'm going to get into controversial ground here before I continue with the press stories that aren't in the news. I mean, the important stories that are not in the press. We're told that New York City is overwhelmed in its hospitals and therefore needed a barge with several tens of thousands of beds. And it was going to handle the overflow of coronavirus cases. Okay, so some intrepid people went to the New York hospital and said, show me your virus cases. I want to see the corona victims. And there weren't any.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on with the barge? Pardon me?
I'd heard the same and seen similar videos from Europe as well with very few people actually in them.
Yeah. It's going to get funny soon. There's going to be a moment where they go, what? And the people are going to go, you've been lying to me all along. Okay, so here's my impression based on some reports. And it's hard to gather evidence, Andrew. It's very hard.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
What I do is I get a bit here, a bit there, a bit there, a bit there. And before you know it, I got from 30 different places. All right, well, let's look to see what this heap of information says. And I try to, no, I don't want your information, your crap. You've been crap for 5 years. So here's what I think is going on. Some of the elites are being arrested and taken to these barges. They're prison barges. But there are still a lot of empty rooms and beds. And it's well known that some of these underground networks of child trafficking have been halted. And a lot of victims have been rescued. Where do you put them? Well, a boat like that is a perfect place. I think a lot of kids, you know, under 14 years of age.
Interesting. I've heard been, this, yeah.
They're trauma victims.
Yeah,
you can't say, well, you know, we're going to send you back to your parents in Peoria, Illinois.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
They're basket cases. They've been tortured for 2 years. It's very simple. None of them have been tortured for more than 2 or 3 years. Probably very few for more than 18 months. They're killed. Okay, I don't want to get into all that, but I think the barges in L.A. and New York are mostly triage trauma centers, but also elite prisons. That's what I think is going on.
Interesting.
Okay. Next story, not in the news. The United States is the only nation with A, B, C, D, E, all five strains of the coronavirus, which indicates from basic virology that it is the nation of origin. China has two. Iran has two. Italy has two. A lot of Western European nations have two. Something is going on. The United States has all five. Therefore, it is the origin. Wake up, people. This is not something that started in China. It came from our Fort Detrick bioweapons lab. The next fact, I mentioned this before, the Wuhan car makers are back in operation. The worst is over. They're not completely out of the woods. They've got problems, but they've closed down some of their temporary hospitals in Wuhan. Why? They don't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the U.S. government corporation declared bankruptcy in middle of February. And I believe a lot of this is an orchestrated storm to cover the cabal owners to sustain the dollar usage and to enable them to maintain control for the next stage of what the currency will look like, rather than permitting China, Russia, and the Belt and Road nations to dictate the terms. I was expecting, based on, you know, my changed forecast 2 years ago, we were going to approach a dual universe, Andrew, dual universe where Asia would work off the RMB in trade and the West would operate off the dollar in trade. And it would be interesting to watch the frontier nations with their battleground, like Germany, like Iran, Saudi Arabia. Those are all nations in flux right now.
Yes.
And now even you could say Western Europe is starting to take on a little bit more Euro settlement with Russian trade. Okay, that's frontier battleground. Okay, the last point is that the Trump re-election is coming up. The primaries began, and so did the virus show up.
Yes, so, yes.
Very curious timing.
Yes, yes, interesting. Can I just add on one issue to that, which is more relevant to people in my country, which is the Brexit issue. So what I thought there when you were saying, you know, about this split between the East and the West and the, you know, the currency trading and so forth, do you think that the Brexit really was to side with the US and that Britain would sort of get in bed with the US and whatever this new currency system, you know, that they're planning would be? Do you think Brexit is part of that, or have you thought about that, or what are your thoughts?
I've got kind of an independent notion that Britain is always a survivor. Britain and their bankers are leaders of movements. I don't mean in a good way always.
No.
The British are out in front. They're noticing which way the winds are changing. They notice, for instance, that the Belt and Road was real. So they were appealing to China to have a role in finance or in technology transfer. I'm of the opinion that Britain wanted Brexit in order to part ways with the United States.
Oh, okay.
Because the United States is basically holding the EU together. And we're using our Langley terrorist operations to keep it together and to keep it in chaos, keep it in more like keep it in a disrupted state. And a disrupted state is not a broken state. It just means that there's more authoritarian rule.
That's like, interesting that you say that, though, because you know it's always been said in the British media. Again, it could just be the usual sort of trash, but that Britain has this special relationship with the US. You know, we speak the same language and all of this, and we have the, we had their air bases here during the Cold War, which you know the UK gave over areas of Britain, and they were declared US soil essentially. So it's interesting that you know you're now saying that while Brexit is really telling the US to, you know, go away, basically. So, yeah, it's interesting that you would
I think Britain, I mean, just put aside currency issues. Right. I think Britain is trying to reinvent itself a little bit. You've lost the North Sea oil income.
Right.
You need to bring back your industry, and it's probably much more unknown to the American audience than it is the British audience that in the north of Britain, there are a lot of different little Chinese factory colonies. Mm-hmm. That's not known by Americans. We don't. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that. That was new to me just a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. London Paul pointed that out to me, and then a couple clients pointed out to me. Someone operating a port facility on the central eastern part of England pointed out that there are a lot of little Chinese colonies and investment camps, trade zone. They're not so much free trade zones as they are investment locations, development areas. Okay, so I think Britain saw the writing on the wall that the King dollar was going away and the great American era was coming to a sunset. So England decided we're not going to go down with the EU. I mean, the United States is attacking Germany over Nord Stream, trying to shove LNG down their throats. They're trying to take control of the Baltic states. The United States is not winning these battles. So Britain broke away from the EU where the United States was losing its control. I mean, I think Britain is looking for independence, looking to reinvent itself, find a role with Chinese trade. I'd like to move quickly to what's different about Italy and Iran. Italy and Iran, why are they different? Why do they – okay, let's get some information right. I think Italy has got a bunch of nasty virus cases, and I don't think it's corona. I don't know what it is. We're going to find out. The medical teams are all over this, but the hospitals are loaded in Italy. They're not in big American cities, U.S. cities. They're not. They're not. It's a big lie. The data is a lie. In Italy, they had, in the last 15, 20 years, Italy has attracted what I've heard is about 30,000 clothing makers. I don't know what the right word is. Textile? Textile shops. It's not to make cloth. It's to make final clothes. So clothing, they're not mills. I don't know what to call them. Clothing shops, clothing. I don't know what to call them. I've struggled with this for 3 or 4 days. Fabrication locations. In Spanish, it's simple. They call them fabricas. Because let me call it a fabrica. Okay. The Italians built dozens and dozens of Chinese-run clothing fabricas, okay? And the central bankers didn't like it. This is an invasion, like little colonies of Chinese clothing fabricas. And the Chinese had specific instructions to their groups. Learn the Italian industry because they're the leaders. Italian, Milan fashion show. It's not just Paris, it's Milan. Okay, so that all got interrupted. And now what I'm hearing is it's a tragic story. You've got 10,000 Chinese women operating in Italy as prostitutes. Okay, so that's what they resorted to. They didn't want to go back home. They saw life in Italy as better than life in China, and they wanted to stay there, so they made a compromise of becoming prostitutes or doing whatever, because they might have little kids to support. Mm-hmm. Okay, not just that, but Italy, Italy has been a thorn in the banker's side. They've had something called their, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a sovereign currency. It was used by their bankers and their government for their big banks to purchase the government deficit, which they financed in terms of this new sovereign currency. And I did a story over a year ago. I thought in my hat trick letter report, which is my document, my newsletter, I thought, well, the Italians were trying to set up an interim quasi-currency that would eventually roll over and transform into the lira and as they got out of the euro.
Ah, okay.
Okay, and that was a real big bothersome point to the Euro Central Bank.
I bet, yeah, yeah.
Okay, not only that, but the Italians said, I know we've got insolvent banks. We're not going to liquidate them. We're not going to let them fail. We're going to keep on shoving money into them. We're going to allow them to operate, you know, as crippled insolvent institutions. And we're not going to let the German bankers come in and ransack our prized jewel assets like they did in Greece. Okay, so Italy is a renegade. And I think Italy got planted a similar type of virus. And it might have been the non-weakened coronavirus.
Okay.
So, don't know. And yeah. Iran, you know, you just need 10 seconds to explain. They're a rogue state. They don't like anything the United States does. They don't follow the U.S. way. We treated them to a Stuxnet virus to harm their nuclear refining facilities. And by the way, the same Stuxnet that we sent to Chernobyl to cause their jam, we caused Chernobyl. We're not the good guys. U.S., U.K., we're not the good guys. Not at all. We've been pretty much taken over since 1988 with Papa Bush becoming president, but it goes earlier because Ronald Reagan, when he was nominated to become the Republican candidate, he said, the last person on earth I will select for VP is George Bush. They put a gun to his head, and he chose George Bush. He won, and less than 60 days, Reagan was shot. Mm-hmm. And on good authority, confirmed 20 different locations, it was an MK Ultra event run by the Bush boys.
Yeah.
So you could say, you could say that Papa Bush was president for 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Following him was Clinton. Following him was Baby Bush. Following him was Obama. So we had 12 years plus 24 years, 36 years of narco presidents. Now, I don't like to call it that. I like to say we had 24 very clearly, plus four more with Bush is 28 years of fascist narco presidents. Here's why it's so important. You can't say, well, we got a new president, we got everything new now. No, no, no. You got the unelected agencies. You got the FBI. You got the NSA. You got many different intelligence agencies. You got the Department of Justice. You got lots and lots of different cabinet offices, agencies, and professionals who don't change with the new president.
Yeah,
they continue. That's now often called extension of the deep state. They helped to support the nonsensical impeachment and the nonsensical Russian dossier.
Yeah.
To try to prove treason by Trump. You know, I got a very good authority. You know, I say that a lot, but I got my sources and I trust them because, boy, have they served me well and been proven right. There's a triad going on. It's Putin, Xi, and Trump, and they're working to prevent the global fascist state and working to prevent a global war. They're working together and in secrecy. It's not treason. It's only treason to the fascist state advocates, the Khazarian globalists. They're not treasonous. If Trump meets with Putin in order to prevent too many usages of illicit micro nukes in Ukraine, is that treason?
Mm-hmm.
If he meets with Trump, Putin meets with Trump, and they review a lot of different plans for peacefully transitioning to the next globalist system that might be with a gold standard, is that treason?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's anti-globalist fascist.
Yes.
It's anti their agenda. And that's where I think we're moving. We're moving to a climax to expose the globalist plan. Like maybe just have a show on Rockefeller's plan from 2010. He thought that 2012 and 14, we were going to have a nice, strong SARS virus that could enable this. But they had to go back to the workshop and come up with the corona. And, you know, these people don't operate in secrecy all that well. I think they've been penetrated. And the group that I think is the hero in the United States is the Defense Intelligence, DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, because they interrupt these nefarious plans and sidetrack them and actually kind of commandeer them in a parallel way so that the path is taken, but the outcome is going to be different. We don't have a lot of time. I don't know how much time, but in the next couple months, this better get cleared up because we can't have, as a fellow interview host said to me, we can't have a nation running around in society with hazmat suits on.
Right.
When I see someone with a mask here in Costa Rica, I giggle, but not outwardly. I giggle internally. There's very few, if any, evidence. Very few cases, if any, evidence of coronaviruses here. And I always ask the same question. How do you know it was coronavirus? What test kit are you using?
Exactly.
Whose news source are you relying on? Has someone gone to the hospitals and actually counted the cases? How are you testing this? And here's something that I've learned. The test kits, if they're really, really cheap, and believe me, governments buy high volume cheap, because they're making them available to the hospitals. Okay, if they are using real cheap, high-volume test kits, then the whole country has got 80% false positives.
Yep.
And, you know, you wouldn't tolerate that for pregnancy, but you do for something like a virus
that can kill.
No, people would much rather be dumb and afraid than aware and courageous.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is the human condition.
Seems to be.
I tell people, no, I'm not wearing a mask because I'm not stupid and I'm not afraid. But you might get the virus. And I said, I get a virus every 2 or 3 years. What's new about that for the last 5,000 years? What's new about that? I had bronchitis in 2017. Didn't kill me. In fact, it lasted longer than what I'm hearing this coronavirus last. Okay, another thing. Why did the New York and California governors prohibit this chloroquinine?
Yeah.
Okay, this quinine derivative.
Right.
Why did they forbid its usage when it was demonstrated to be effective? Well, Governor Cuomo of New York said it's not FDA approved. So what does Trump do? Trump is not the bad guy here. He may be arrogant and may have funny hair and may say a lot of stupid things, but he's the good guy in this picture and in this battle. Trump went out and said, we're going to have fast-track FDA approval for this quinine derivative. And now it's fast-track approved. So all these states don't have to use it. They can't be forbidden to use it.
Yeah, they can't refuse to use it on the grounds of FDA.
Exactly. So the governor has been pushed to the side. Now, I'd like to see this governor recalled. How about a vote to get rid of Governor Cuomo? How about a vote to get rid of Governor Idiotic Brown in California? The guy's a moron. He's a globalist hack. He did everything possible to support the Rothschilds with the phony forest fires. Everything. Okay, you know, we've got a global fascist creep going on that began in the 1990s.
I agree.
Some people think, well, you know, Trump just needs one more term to clean this up. No, we need 10 to 15 more years to clean this up. And what I'm hearing is that the Defense Intelligence Agency is going to try to put this on the fast track. And I don't know how successful they're going to be. I don't know how much time they need. And I don't even know if there will be an election in the United States this November. I don't know. I have my hopes, because I really want Joe Biden to be the absolute moron, philanderer, womanizing abuser, and fraud king from Ukraine Investments. I want him to be front and center with the spotlight on him. And I want him exposed as a Democrat hack criminal. And there's talk about Hillary being the vice president. I would welcome that. 2 years ago, I had a side-by-side photo, pair of photos, of the 73-year-old Hillary. And next to her, that was August of 16, next to her was this younger version of Hillary who looked about 50 or 52 years old. And morons have looked at that and said, Hillary looks great. And I say, you are a moron. This is obvious clone. Obvious clone. Trump, a week later after the October CNN debate, which is a fraudulent affair, actually said the woman with whom I debated. He didn't say, you know, when I debated Hillary, he said, well, the woman with whom I debated, well, we talked about, he didn't even call her Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hillary is operating out of London. Why is she given safe haven in London? Is it because the banker cabal is giving her free passage and a get out of jail card and a new clone ID? I mean, this is very basic stuff. The Voice told me there are 7 cloning centers on Earth, and they've been operating for 30 years. And we're told, oh, no, no, that's futuristic nonsense. Oh, really? Take a look at Hillary side by side. I can send you the picture. You can put it on your website.
Yeah, I will.
I'll send it to you. It is so clear. She's got a lot of the facial expressions and facial features of the old Hillary, the hag, but she's got a little bit wider face.
I noticed that.
A little bit prettier countenance compared to Hillary. Hillary in her prime was not beautiful. She was, you know, just, you know, a nice looking lady. And a lot of people wonder, golly, why didn't the Clintons have a bigger family? And I say to them, well, take a close look at Chelsea Clinton, and you'll notice that her father is Webster Hubble. Okay, the Clintons did not have a family because they're both Rockefellers. This is all over the place. You know, Zuckerberg is a Rockefeller. Bill Clinton is a Rockefeller. These are bastard children and kids who changed their names. Bill Clinton is a bastard son of the Rockefellers. You think he could have won office with the name of William Jefferson Rockefeller? It might actually bring
possibly
up a number of questions. And before you know it, you're talking about, you know, lineage and not talking about policy questions when you're the governor of Arkansas, which I'm told is a very important position in U.S. politics. Governor of Arkansas. Yeah, they're trendsetters and, you know, they're world travelers.
They are.
Yeah. Okay, well, Hillary comes from a different line within the same Rockefellers. Another bastard child. It's just so sickening what's happening. I learned something 20 years ago. I noticed that Jimmy Carter, he came out of nowhere. He was a governor of Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia has got a very important city called Atlanta. But let's face it, the state of Georgia, they're not trendsetters, they're not technology centers. Atlanta is, but not Georgia. The University of Georgia is kind of a backward university where they go to learn algebra in college. I can say that because I had a professor at Carnegie Mellon who did not get tenure, did not get the promotion, and went to the University of Georgia and left because he got tired of teaching algebra and trigonometry. Mm-hmm. He said, Jim, I much prefer calculus and mathematical statistics. I said, I can understand that, Bill. So he came back to Carnegie Mellon as a, you know, a lecturer and a step down. But my point is that Jimmy Carter came out of nowhere. So I did some digging, and I noticed, my gosh, he looks a lot like Robert Kennedy. Well, he should. He's his half-brother. Mm. Joe mm-hmm. Kennedy Sr. is the father of Jimmy Carter. Joe Kennedy Sr., you know, the bootlegger, yes. Guy who made his fortune shorting the stock market on insider information during the Great Depression.
And funded the Nazi regime.
Yeah, funded the Nazi regime. Well, Joseph Kennedy Jr., you know, the father of the Kennedys, had a secretary named Lillian. Why during the entire Carter presidency of 4 years did they never talk about his father?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
They only talk about Miss Lillian. Well, Miss Lillian, who's Jimmy's father? Never permitted to ask. Okay, you line up four Kennedys and Carters. You got Jack Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Jimmy Carter, Billy Carter. The two that look the most alike are not Jack and Bobby Kennedy. It's Bobby Kennedy and Jimmy Carter.
Mm.
There's a reason. They share the same father. And we know it, that men, when they grow up, tend to take the characteristics physically of their father. Different with girls. The girls don't look like their dads. They look like their mothers. Sometimes. And men don't always look exactly like their father. I actually have something. My mother reminded me of this for 10 years after, giggling every time she told the story. We went down to my mother's basement, my parents' basement, and there was a picture on a little old dresser, you know, full of old stuff, you know, memorabilia and things. And on the top was a picture. And I said, oh, look at that, Mom. You got my high school graduation picture. And she just looked at me a little bit funny and said, yeah, So I looked at it again. And, you know, I haven't changed much, Mom. I'm still a handsome dog. We used to joke a lot, me and my parents. And she looked at it and she said, yeah, and there's John's picture, my brother. There's John's over to the side. And I said, yeah, yep. And she said, Jim, will you do me a favor? Will you take a closer look at your high school picture? It was my dad.
All right, okay.
My dad's high school graduation picture. And you couldn't see, you know, like any evidence of 50 years ago. No, it was just a face and a tie and a shirt.
Mm.
And I walked away going, oh, my God. I turned it around. I turned it around and it said 1938.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a wake up moment for me. Mm-hmm. My mother, you know, just giggled her way and went upstairs. Bob, I got to tell you about this. It's so funny. Yeah. My mother was a cute little thing. She passed away 12 years ago.
Mm.
My dad just hit 100. But before we go out, we're here an hour and a half. Okay. That's good. Let me just say about the website, Andrew.
Sure, please do, yeah.
It's www.golden-jackass.com. A year ago, January, so we got 14 months. Started a new website. It's got better graphics. It's got better everything. And I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. It's got a wider format. It's more friendly to the portable devices. It's got better graphics. It's easier to operate, and I don't have ability to get in there. I used to get into my old one and change a few minor things, like new articles being posted. But Someday I might learn the WordPress for that. Not a big deal. But we've got a Hattrick Letter report. It's called the Gold Reset Report.
Yeah.
It's basically a gold report. It focuses on gold, focuses on currencies, central bank policy, economic development that works counter to the dollar, like the Belt and Road and the Eurasian Trade Zone and all that word, the world, the petrodollar and the fracture, oil and how it figures with the dollar. Here, let me just throw out a wild forecast. We might see negative oil prices.
Huh.
Now,
wow.
Don't tell me, oh, no, no, Jim, it's a tangible product. Well, yeah, so's a house, but that seemed to fall with the housing finance, mortgage finance bubble, okay? And we do have negative rates for bonds, even though there's unspeakable debt every year, okay? So don't tell me that negative prices aren't possible. I'm telling you that the petrodollar is fracturing. The derivatives are being liquidated, and it's gone out of control. We might, we got forecasts that we could go down to $5 to $10 a barrel.
Wow.
Okay, I think with the fracture of the petrodollar, it might go to negative and be a very embarrassing story. It's going to be funny. Anyway, let me give you a little truism that I think applies to American finance, U.S. finance. If there's a $1 billion profit, it's probably a crime scene.
Yeah.
If there's a $1 trillion profit, it's probably for a regime change or systemic enhancement or change. Mm-hmm. But wherever there's a billion, there are no $1 billion coincidences. Mm-hmm. If there's a big profit, we've turned it into a crime scene. I've given you examples of the Japanese 0%, all that. It's called the yen carry trade. I've given you an example of the gold carry trade. You need a 0% to pull it off. And now I think we're stuck. We're stuck in a corner. The central banks have no options. All they can do now is rev up. I call it infinite QE to infinity. Infinite QE forever. Unlimited volume. And it's going to be, for as far as the eye can see, there's a quote that has been recited many times, attributed to me, and it is from me. In 2014 and 15, I said the dollar is going to rise, then rise, then rise some more until it vanishes. Okay, its rise is not from strength. It's from broken financial system globally, where the United States has the sole privilege of printing money.
Mm.
So we finance our side, our debt. And for instance, little Dominican Republic or little, you know, Colombia, their currencies fall because they've got their regular debt and they can't finance it, but we can. So we print money, we cover our debt. They can't. It's not the same for other nations like Russia. They can, you know, produce and have tremendous amount of reserves accumulated and cover their debt. So anyway, thanks for having me on. And I think it was fun going down memory lane for recent U.S. fraudulent history.
Great.
Ever since we got away from the gold standard, the Bretton Woods, 1971, ever since we got away from that, U.S. finance has been a crime scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Financial engineering has been a disaster. It's largely a fraudulent series of chapters. Every single derivative that we've produced, every single leveraged instrument we've defrauded. Look at what we've done with the stock buybacks in U.S. stocks. Something like 75% of all the stocks that were purchased for a 10-year period were from stock buybacks from their own corporations. This is fraud. And now it's all coming apart, and they don't want it to come apart in a disorderly way. They want order through medical fascist imposition. I don't think it's going to work, but I'll tell you honestly, Andrew, I don't know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
Okay. We've got a lot of public articles and public interviews with links on the Golden-Jackass site. But that's where you sign. There's a subscribe button.
Great.
And it's a very, I think, very reasonably priced 6-month subscription, automatically renewed. And what I've noticed that in starting about, early February, something like a switch went on, just a lot of new subscriptions, a lot of new clients without a past, a lot of people who 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 1 year ago, they're back. They canceled and they're back. Something big is happening, and I think Hattrick Letter readers are well ahead of the game and ahead of the pack in understanding what's happening. But I'd like to cite two other buttons. One is a consult button, and that's getting a lot of attention recently also, but probably for a lot of different reasons. I think some of my older clients just want to talk to me, but that's okay. But I got half hour, 1 hour, 90 minute options for consult. And it's a phone call direct. I'm enduring right now the climax of 3 years of horrific events in my life.
Yes. Yes.
That have cost me on the order of $500,000.
Yes.
I don't like to talk about exact figures, but I'm dealing with over 80,000 in losses just since Christmas.
It's terrible. Yes.
Having to do with wrongful death.
Yes.
A problem with something in a property, and there was a contamination. It's a septic system, and the neighbor died.
It's terrible. Yeah, it's tragic.
Hospital bills, funeral bills, remodeling bills for the house, and then a punitive damage. And there was another wrongful death. I don't want to get into a lot of details.
No.
I've had events that you cannot say, well, gee, Jim, these bankers are trying to get you. No, a banker is not in charge of a 50-foot tree that fell on the house.
No.
A banker is not in charge of a short circuit in an electrical box that blew a hole with a fire through the roof.
No.
Bankers aren't in charge of a client suffering a head-on crash and dying who owed a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Banker is not in charge of an earthquake that resulted in a lot of earth movement and subsidence that resulted in a $7,000 wall that had to be built.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
These are just a lot of different events, and this is shocking. I could go on for 20 minutes on a list of 20, 30, 50, 80, $200,000 losses. One after the other that's totaled tremendous losses, and one was a crime scene. I tell you, I'm getting it from all sides. That's why I say, please go to the donate button and hit it and help me out. But if you want to talk about your own specific issues, hire me for a consult fee. I'm available. I do a lot of work, but I want to express my deep gratitude to a lot of people. It's several hundred since last July, and I'm continuing it against the advice of some people. I say, why stop it? It's working.
Sure.
Okay. Good. Well, thanks for having me on. And
Jim, this has been very, very interesting, very useful to a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, it's been a fantastic discussion, stuff that, you've explained a lot of stuff, which has given me a good bit of context into some of the financial scammery that's led up to what we're seeing now, and how this is. And I think it's going to be really useful to a lot of people to see, and understand, and I now know why Frank wanted me to speak to you, because I think it's going to illuminate a lot of these dark corners which people have had suspicions over. So this is really valuable, I think, for a lot of people. Okay then, Jim. Well, again, thank you very much for your valuable insights and expertise and so forth. So thank you very much. And I really appreciate you taking the time to explain all of this. Yeah.
Okay.
And the website is golden-jackass.com, isn't it? So
yes, it is.
I'll put that up as well.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me on. Bye now.
Thank you.